And welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I thank you for joining us every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. We stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com, and we also archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and we encourage you to check out all of our programs, and we hope that you will share them with friends and family and listen to them again and again. I have to go back and listen to them sometimes just because of some of the information that has been given, and I was listening. That's not the problem. It's that something was so deep, if you will, and it was such of a deep nature that I had to go back and listen to it a couple of times, replay that 5 or 10 minute segment and going, okay, now I understand that on a deeper level. So we encourage you to do that. It's that sometimes our guests give us exercises to practice breathing and so forth, which breathing doesn't make for great radio. I want you to know that. But nonetheless, we will give you techniques from time to time to keep the heart and lungs going and hopefully keep you moving forward in this life. Well, today we're going to be talking with a gentleman who is famous and infamous, maybe all in the same breath. He's taken us to interstellar levels of relationships with his best-selling book, Men Are from Mars, Women Are from Venus. And we're going to be talking with, of course, Dr. John Gray. He has a new book out and a DVD. It's Venus on Fire and Mars on Ice. I am very interested to find out about that because here on the Central Coast, we don't like talking about fire. We like to keep it cool if we can, some sunshine, but no fire if we can at all help it. Dr. John Gray, I want to thank you so much for joining us on our program.
Well, thank you. It's a real pleasure to spend some time with you.
Now, this particular book and the work that you've been doing for so many years has to do with hormonal balancing and the key to life, love, and energy, which is basically what we talk about on this program, that really it comes down to relationships, not only with others, but even with ourselves. And I know that that is part of the dynamic, is that we have to get to know ourselves a little bit. Isn't that right?
Well, absolutely. I think people ask me, you know, how do you discover all this? And part of it was being a therapist for, you know, 10 years listening to women talk for 8 hours a day. You begin to realize women really, really are different from men. And also combining that with the ability to self-reflect and analyze, self-analysis. And not everybody's automatically does that, but I spent 10 years as a monk before I became a therapist, which was a lot of self-reflection and so forth. So I'm very introspective in kind of analyzing who I am, and yet when I started counseling women, I realized they were not who I am.
and they often
had a complete misinterpretation of where men were coming from, and men easily misinterpreted where women were coming from. Women just didn't make sense to men, and I spent 10 years developing a system, this is 30 years ago, where we could understand each other in a positive light, because the differences come up and they cause confusion.
Well, now I'm curious about something in terms of the ways in which men behave and react and women behave and react and the models that we are given in society today. How accurate are those? Because I get a little frustrated seeing the stupid guy who gets accused of being a guy. You know what I'm saying? It's like someone will say, well, weren't you listening? Well, of course not. I'm a guy. I'm not supposed to listen. That kind of thing, the stereotypes.
Yeah, I mean, as I'm listening to you, I'm realizing that you're talking about stereotypes as they've moved over the last 30 years, where the irony of what you're saying, I don't want to dive into the stupidity of a lot of TV shows, because a lot of things are just done for comedy. But there is a reality, a very serious reality, which is that women today, it started in the 90s, they started complaining men don't listen. And books were written about it, and talk shows all talked about it. Now, here's the irony, is that never before did women complain that men didn't listen. And what is the big deal? What does it mean when men don't listen? Of course men listen. We're listening to each other. We listen to our wives. It's obvious we listen. But we're not listening in a way that women would like us to. There's a new way that women are looking for us to listen. And women have never expected it and never wanted it and never gotten it. And suddenly they have a new need, a new expectation, which is we're supposed to listen without doing what we earn our living doing. You know, we earn our living to support our families by listening to problems and solving them. So our wives will come home from work or have a stressful day, and they'll start talking about problems. And so what we do is what we've always done, which women always appreciated about men, is that we'll jump right in there and we'll do our best to solve the problem. And never was communication itself the solution to the problem. But the world has dramatically changed, and nobody has clearly articulated that. And they ridicule and they reject and they condemn and they dismiss men for not living up to some unrealistic expectation that women have, that men are suddenly supposed to become therapists and be able to listen to a woman complain about him and say, tell me more, tell me more.
Yeah.
Now, I'm being a little cynical for a moment, but the flip side of this, it's a very legitimate need that women have, which is once women shifted their lifestyles to being in the workplace, and once computers came in and our lifestyle speeded up, okay, the speed of life dramatically increased, it affects women differently than it affects men.
Mm-hmm.
If you measure a woman's hormones in the workplace, her stress hormone is twice as high as a man's. If you measure a woman's hormones when she comes into her home after spending the day at work and not spending a day doing nurturing activities, not for money, but she's just, you know, she's, if a woman is spending time doing things not for money and not with urgency, her stress levels stay very low. But when she's in the workplace working for money and she doesn't have enough time, two very key factors that actually bring out the best in men but bring out the worst in women, when she gets home, her stress levels are four times higher than a man's stress levels at work. So this is like really shocking reality of hormonal problems that are happening today. Women used to be happier than men on all the psychological tests. Now, in this last decade, women are more unhappy than men. Men have not changed. Mm. Men have not become worse. Men are the heroes. Men are wonderful beings. And along with the good, there's always some bad.
Sure.
There's so much emphasis in the women's movement to focus on the bad and exaggerated statistics that aren't true. Let me give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
4 years ago, Donald Rumsfeld proclaimed that, made a national announcement based on some study he was quoting that was a faulty study, which said that one out of three women will be raped by a man in her lifetime. This is completely faulty. There's no statistics. There's nothing even close to something like that. That was based upon a study that was done in universities where they interviewed women, which is how many women had been raped. And there, almost none had been raped. We see the rape stories in the news. Okay, there's very few. But what they defined as rape was any time a man made a sexual advance or kissed her even with her willingness or touched her even with her willingness when she was under the influence of alcohol. So if she'd had a drink of wine and they kissed, the survey concluded, even though she said it wasn't rape, concluded it was rape. So one out of three women will be kissed under the influence of alcohol in her lifetime. And suddenly now you've got the universities all with this huge anti-male, you know, discrimination towards men and around anything. I mean, this is just creating fear and chaos and confusion. There's statistics about how violent men are. Now, the truth is that 90% of violent crimes are done by men. And we can, and that's always been the case. Men were bred and trained, and our wiring is different as hunters and protectors. When we feel powerless and out of control, we lose control, and violence does erupt. That's not excusing violence. It's we have to train men how to contain that and control that. But at the same time, when you look at violence towards women from men, it's extremely low. It's dramatically over-exaggerated. The greatest violence towards women is what causes death in women is our medical system, cancer.
Yeah.
I mean, the women are dying of cancer left and right, and what causes cancer? We have all these marches for helping cancer research on curing cancer. Why don't we teach women what causes cancer? I ask again and again in my audiences and in my wellness seminars, what causes cancer? There is a one universal cause of cancer, high stress level.
Hello. Yeah.
It's proven. Nobody disputes this, and yet nobody knows this. Ask any researcher what causes the immune system. What causes cancer? Is it a weakened immune system. Over 40, we all have cancer. This is research which has shown it's in our bodies, but it's not out of control. Our body is controlling it. Our body is keeping it down.
Yeah.
By the immune system. What is the number one thing that's happening today that weakens our immune system that's proven by stress levels?
And there's another element as well, because, and this is a factor I know, I've been married twice and I have four sisters and a mother, and that stress also exacerbates weight gain.
Oh, absolutely.
Which when then exacerbates the stress.
Exactly. Another source of stress.
Yes.
We'll call it that.
Mm-hmm.
But when cortisol is the stress hormone, some people are not familiar. When we say stress, they think traffic jams or whatever. It's a hormone which is being produced in your body called cortisol. And what happens is when women are working for money, stress levels go higher. Now, they can cope with that stress level, but when women are working for free, like they're loving their family, a nurturing hormone gets produced that regulates stress levels in women. This hormone's called oxytocin. So whenever a woman is working for free, serving for free, when a woman feels nurtured and supported, when a woman feels safe and secure, those activities, family life, a loving family life, whenever a woman's in that environment, her oxytocin levels go high, and they also get released into her bloodstream. And that inhibits the stress response in her. That's a woman's protection against stress. And today, our lifestyles don't support women in enough hours in oxytocin. Instead, they're spending hours in a lifestyle that stimulates a hormone called testosterone, which is great for men. Men have to make 30 times more testosterone than women to be healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Low testosterone in men is the number one cause of heart disease.
Yeah.
Low testosterone causes low libido, causes lack of romance, causes, you know, inability to sleep through the night, all kinds of problems for men with low testosterone. So a work situation that's rewarding for a man will release testosterone and keep his stress levels in a healthy level.
Hmm.
For a woman, testosterone inhibits oxytocin, which lowers her stress.
Well, and I've really enjoyed this discussion, especially when we're talking about the biology of men and women and how it creates the dynamics in the relationships, so, and sometimes the dysfunctions in those relationships. But I want to talk a little bit more about the external factors as well, especially our technology. And everybody, of course, today is getting hooked up to all of the social networks and social media and what have you. I myself, even as we are talking here today, I am in the process of purchasing my first, they call them, smartphones. Up until now, I've just had a standard flip Motorola phone. That all it does basically, yes, I can access the internet, but there's not much functionality there. I'm making phone calls. I'm talking to you on a cell phone, for example, and conferencing it and so on and so forth. But people are connecting in these non-physical, quite honestly, non-linear ways, disconnected, almost anonymous, if not ambiguous, ways that they say now that, what is it, 1 in 3 couples meet on the internet? And I mean, I've heard the statistics in some of the commercials. I don't know exactly what they are, but I'm wondering from your perspective and your 30 plus years experience, what is this new dynamic to relationships really doing or undoing?
Okay, well, let's first I will explain the biochemistry of what's happening, but let's look at just the facts on a social level, what's happened to the quality of relationships. First of all, the quality of relationships, we are still, since 1969, divorce went from 10% to 50%. And it stayed for first marriages of two people who've never been married before. Half of those people will get divorced. But what's not seen is that 25% of the married potential married population is now gone. 25% of the people that wanted to get married before are not even getting married. So there's less marriages than ever before. We're on a track like Sweden and Denmark and whatever, where people just don't get married anymore and they don't have sex anymore. It's just a shocking transition which is going on, which is you've got younger people. And they hook up because of our fast pace of life. Everything is fast. We want immediate gratification. I want to talk to that person. I want to get a response back. Oh, I'm waiting for the response. I get the response back. What this does is it stimulates a brain chemical called dopamine. And dopamine gives us pleasure. It's what cocaine produces. It's also what doing good behavior does in moderate amounts. However, cocaine gives you big doses of it. Well, when your little emails are coming, you know, you're sitting there waiting for it. It comes. There's a little excitement you get. Oh, let me go. Let me see what's come. Let me see all the information that's come. That little excitement, that's a surge in dopamine. And what that surge in dopamine does, particularly for women, less so for men, inhibits the functioning of the hormone serotonin, the brain chemical serotonin. That then leads to greater stress levels in women. So while it's exciting and it's fulfilling, this thing that was like so good, it tasted so good, it's another almost drug-like experience, which leaves us feeling empty and more stressed and more dependent on it. So people get addicted to their phone, to their phones. There's a movie I just saw called Connected, where they were also demonstrating this, which is basically, you know, women going in the bathroom now and just to check their email, you know, they're leaving their relationship. Oh, I got to leave that and go to check my email. This is similar to 20 years ago when a wife's always biggest complaint was that, you know, my husband doesn't give me his full attention. He's thinking about work. Well, now women have caught on to that plague. Women are becoming like men. And as women become like men, their stress levels become four times higher. That's the problem today. And all of this technology is great. By the way, I don't have a smartphone for that reason. I don't want to live with my work with me all the time.
That's how I feel.
That's an addiction. People don't realize this is an addiction. Your work in front of you all the time is creating a sense of urgency, and that sense of urgency causes stress levels to increase. You're living in a sea of stress, which then leaves you empty, and then you crave that stimulation of dopamine, just like an addict. For people who are drug addicts, it's increasing the dopamine. For people that are alcoholics, not everybody can become an alcoholic. You have to have a certain DNA which will convert alcohol into dopamine. So for me, I could never be addicted to alcohol because it doesn't make dopamine in my brain. It makes serotonin, kind of makes me a little sleepy and cool and fine feeling, whatever. But it's not like I have to have it. Some people, as soon as you get those high levels of dopamine, your brain now says, I must have more, I must have more. And that's an addiction. And that's what this immediacy of contact through cell phones is one of the things with everything on it. Being able to TV set, you know, you travel around with your TV set. You know, you see parents, you know, it's the best babysitter for your child. You know, have an iPad. You stick an iPad in front of them, they're watching TV. That stimulates dopamine in their brain at higher levels than playing a game or having a conversation or doing some craft, which is actually developing motor skills, artistic skills, rather than going into a passive state. I don't want to sound too much like an extremist here, but we just have to be careful of these things. We want to bring in new technology. It's all great. You know, I've got my computer, and I do have an iPad. I do check my once a day when I'm traveling, I will check my emails, and that's it. I don't go checking them all the time. I'm not, you know, looking it on my phone. It's not available to me. And my wife's biggest complaint is that when I'm off, I turn off my phone.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know for a man as well, the most multitasking mm-hmm. is a major source of stress for men, and multitasking is a double source of stress for women if they feel a sense of urgency. Their brains are designed to multitask. If you're a woman, your brain is designed, for example, to be thinking, what's for dinner? What do I have to pick from the garden? What condition are my five children in? Where's my husband? What's the condition of the mold growing in the bathroom? You know, her mind is designed to be thinking of all these things as a nurturer. Men's brains evolved, and they tend to focus on one thing. If you're in the jungle and you're protecting your family, you're looking for danger. Or if you're after an animal, you're sitting there waiting and waiting and waiting, focusing on one thing because you have to react very, very quickly to protect yourself or to attack. So men have designed, their brains have adapted. Their brains are basically, if you look at a brain scan, when a man is doing an activity, he tends to use one part of the brain. And then he does another activity, he uses another part of the brain. But when men are having this shift back and forth from different things, it will also raise men's stress levels. For women, what causes their it causes women's stress levels to quadruple, four times higher than a man's. And women jump right into it. It's harder for a man to shift into worrying about a lot of things. He really has to have a lot of stress. Otherwise, most guys will focus on getting the job done, and when he's done with the job, he's finished with his day, he can forget his problems. That forgetting his problems is what lowers stress in a man. Men have that ability to do it. But some men come right home, and they go on their computer, and they start solving more problems, they start going to work, and they don't realize that the number one stress reducer for men is to do something that does not involve earning money, that does not involve solving serious problems, but instead solving playful problems. And that was like a hobby. That's playing golf, playing tennis, having some exercise thing, some yoga class or meditation. You know, these are these ancient techniques along with new things, recreational activities that don't, they're not the serious part of life. When men do that, that's why men come home and they sit on the couch and watch a football game. That will do it too.
Mm-hmm.
All he has to do is distract his attention away from the problems that are stressing him and relax his muscles, and his body will rebuild the hormone testosterone that helps him to cope with stress better the next day. So it's a cycle. He has to work hard, and then he has to rest hard or recreation hard.
Yeah.
Women don't have that wiring. That doesn't work for her, and women don't understand it. So one of the biggest sources of stress in a marriage, and this is still true, the biggest source of stress in a marriage is how we cope differently with stress. Women look at their husband watching a football game or looking at the news, and she's feeling, I got 15 things to do, and why does anyone help?
You know, you mentioned multitasking, and I have to say that the definition of multitasking, as you've described it, especially for women, is not the same as the kind of multitasking that is going on in this country and around the world today with our technology. And you may be familiar with a study that came out just recently that spoke to the issue of the level of the quality of productivity by those who multitasked, as opposed to those who, and my boss likes to put this in this context, who serial single task. And that's what we're about here at this station. We try everything we can not to multitask because it has been shown, it has been proven that the quality of the production that comes out, the work that you do, is not as good as from someone who is 100% focused on that task.
Absolutely. I'm right with you there. It's a serial focus. You go from this to this to this, and you finish things. What happens is when people start taking on a lot of things at the same time, that starts stimulating this brain chemical dopamine, they get addicted to starting things, but they don't finish things. And at a certain point, they don't even know they haven't finished. Add a few more years on that, get into your 50s, and you walk into your bedroom, and you forgot what you went there for.
Exactly. And I've done that more times than I care to think.
And this is all part of inhibited dopamine function due to the overstimulation of dopamine due to, for many, in the old days, due to drugs.
Yeah.
But now we've got electronics and a fast pace of life that overstimulates us with dopamine.
John Gray is my guest, a PhD. He is the author of the most recent book, Venus on Fire, Mars on Ice, and we will stay, we'll be coming back and staying with John for just a few more moments as we continue talking here on Tell Me Your Story. Don't go away.
Tell me your stories, I'll do my best to understand you.
Do you understand what John is talking about here on Tell Me Your Story? John Gray is my guest, the author of Venus on Fire, Mars on Ice, and we're talking about relationships. We're talking about our modern day. And John, I have to say, as we broke for our segment, I can't help but think about this as you are talking about what men do when they come home after work. Now, where I happen to live here on the Central Coast, I certainly could plop down in front of the TV, which on occasion I do, and I'm not a big sports fan. I love baseball, but that's only around for, you know, 6 months out of the year. I like being outside and doing projects. Now, for me, that's not work. That is, for me, relaxation. I will cut wood for the fire for winter.
One of the best things a guy can do is cut wood.
Yeah. Well, and of course, my wife is always saying, okay, be careful, don't hurt yourself, which I appreciate the concern without a doubt. Or whatever little projects need to be done, I enjoy that. We have chickens as well. Most everybody knows that we have chickens. And I have two dogs, and we have cats, and there's plenty to do. And I enjoy that.
Let me create a context here.
Sure.
Which I write about in my books, I write about in this book, to help women understand actually how to get more help at home. One of the things women need, again, we talked earlier about the hormone balance. More oxytocin is what they're missing. And I don't want to imply that women have to go back to living like they lived in the past. They just need more awareness to make better choices. And oxytocin used to be produced when women did routine rhythmic work, like the laundry is never done. That's routine rhythmic work.
Mm-hmm.
That actually stimulates oxytocin. Some women, when they're stressed, they start cleaning, because actually cleaning, anything to do with cleaning, cooking, nurturing, shopping, all those things are proven to increase oxytocin, but only if you have time, that's the key, or support, help.
Mm-hmm.
So women are wanting more help today. So what you're talking about is one of the ways women can bring out the best help in a man, which is to know that men are really good at projects. Projects energize men because it has a goal. It's something that's a problem, and you're kind of like fixing it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We need the wood for the winter. I'm going to go solve that problem. When I'm done, it's done.
That's
it's
right.
It's finished. It's completed. Whereas the laundry is always needing to get done. The dishes are always needing to get done. And I'm not implying men can't help with that either. I'm saying that when you do it from the point of view of, these are my routine jobs, but with my schedule today, I have a problem. I need your help. Would you fix it? This is the project. And give him a specific task to do. Men love that. And give him his own timetable to do it on, so he doesn't feel like you're telling him what to do. You're giving a problem. Would you fix it?
Yeah. And I mean, I have no problem. I don't know. Maybe it's because I grew up with so much estrogen in my family. I have no problem doing the dishes. It was one of the tasks that the six of us traded around. I have no problem doing the laundry, whether I hang it out on a line or throw it in the dryer and then fold it. And my wife has basically, she says, you know, those tasks I really don't enjoy. And so I do try to help out in that regard. There are things that she does enjoy doing, and so she does those as well.
Well, that's really the ideal relationship, which you kind of find out, what is it that you enjoy doing the most?
Yeah.
What jobs would you like to do? Because people are always asking me, what should men do? Should men do this? And I go, why don't you find out what you both enjoy, and then find out what she doesn't enjoy,
mm-hmm.
what she really doesn't like, then ask him to do that. And that's really a very cool thing for him to do, because he always feels like he's doing her a favor. He's doing something for her that she doesn't like to do.
You know, the real irony for me, though, John, was back in January of 2011, in December, I guess, I went to the doctor because I was feeling a little on the depressed side, little sluggish, little slow. Went in there, and of course, they checked my blood pressure, and they said, oh, you got high blood pressure there. Here's what we need to do, blah, blah, blah. So they gave me these pills, and January, the first Monday in January when we went back to work after the holidays, I couldn't sleep. I was up at 5:30 and I started doing the dishes in the morning. And there are always dishes in the sink in the morning. And I'm sitting there and I'm doing the dishes and I had taken my medication and my wife comes in at 6 and I'm just puttering away there. She says, are you hyper? And I said, I think so. And I continue to do that, though. I'm not on the medication anymore. But I guess I'm understanding you to say is when you do these kinds of things, it releases the stress, it lowers the blood pressure, it helps the whole physiological and biological makeup of both men and women so that then they can truly engage in the aspects of the relationship that bring both of them life and vigor and energy in terms of pursuing greater things.
Absolutely. And to put it in sort of simple biological terms, when a man feels he's doing something useful, and particularly for his wife that he loves, and how does he know it's useful? Because it's something she doesn't like doing or something she really appreciates a lot. And usually if somebody does something you don't like doing, you go, oh my gosh, I'm so glad you're here. That little message, I'm so glad you're here. Oh, you make my life so much easier. I'm so lucky to have you in my life.
Mm-hmm.
That we'll call that appreciation. That is what actually helps men to increase the hormone testosterone and release it to keep their stress levels down. That's why if you have a job where people really appreciate what you do, you feel, you know, men's stress levels are much lower in that situation. If you're in a job where you feel like nobody, you're not being useful, or nobody appreciates you, and that's often measured by the fact you're not getting paid much, it can be a real source of stress for men. So the more you're rewarded for what you do if you're a man, the healthier your testosterone levels. For women, the key is the more they feel that they're seen, they're heard, that somebody cares for them as much as they care for that person, that sense of reciprocity, of caring, of love, of attention, of understanding. So helping out around the house is certainly something that can lower stress for women today, because they start to feel isolated, not enough time, that raises their stress. But multiplied times 10, better communication is the biggest stress reducer for women. If they know how to communicate, many women will say, I don't want to talk to him. I have too much to do. And I say, well, you have too much to do because you're not taking the time to share what's going on inside of you so he can feel connected to you, so you don't feel alone. The problem is when she does share, he doesn't know how to listen, and she doesn't know how to share in a way that will help him to listen. So that's why we started out the conversation today where, you know, this whole thing about women making fun of men that they yeah. can't listen and I'm just being a guy. Of course guys listen, and guys listen to find the problem to solve it.
Yeah.
But what guys don't know today, and often women don't realize, is that what will really solve the problem is that the problem is she's stressed out. And the way you lower stress is to create a situation to produce oxytocin. And it turns out that one of the major oxytocin producers, much more than doing dishes, although that's a nice thing, is listening.
Mm-hmm.
And where she can feel, she opens up and he goes in and he's there for her. That's a whole training in how to do that. Men and women have never done that before, and they're not doing it now. They don't do it nearly as effectively as they could. So it's a whole art to teaching women how to open up and share in a way that doesn't make a man feel defensive or doesn't make him feel bored.
Yeah.
The third part of this, another big oxytocin producer, is romance. Is women often go, well, he's just not romantic, and they give up, and they don't realize that a woman plays an equal role in romance. She often thinks he's going to do it. And what you have to do is men don't know what you want. So you have to let a man know, next week, these are some things I'd like to do. Would you pick one and then plan it? And so he has the onus of sort of delivering the product, but she has to give him some options so he knows that if I deliver one of these options, it's going to make her really happy. And then when she goes on that date, her romantic aspect of it, to keep the romance alive, is not to focus on what goes wrong, but instead focus on what goes right so he feels that he was really helpful. And making
yeah,
her happy.
Exactly. I know that I get frustrated in that arena too. And I know other men have dealt with the scenario, especially when you're dealing with holidays, which, you know, we're going through at this time. And whether it's the regular annual holidays or special event days, anniversaries, birthdays, etc., it's you ask your partner, what do you want to do or what do you want? And it's usually, well, you know, I mean, you've lived with me for X number of years. You know what I want. And I would like it to be a surprise. Well, that's all fine and well, but
and
even,
I would like it to be a surprise.
And
but not only are you supposed to know.
Yeah. So then there's the dynamic of, okay, well, we need to plan to do this when it comes. We can't just do it because things happen. And I bring that up because
right.
We had an event that just happened. We lost a member of our family here, and it hit her very hard, much harder. My sorrow comes from her sorrowfulness.
Yes.
Not as much as the loss. Yes, it hurts that we lost this family member, but, you know, my heart goes out to her, so I'm there, and I'm comforting her and so forth. And I even told her, I actually said this to her. I says, you know, there isn't really anything that I can say to you. You know that. So I'm just going to be here and I'm going to listen, or if you just want to be held, what have you, because I know that, and she knows that, that there's nothing I can say that's going to diminish the pain of the loss.
Right, right.
But again, it goes back to the communication. And of course, then a lot of guys get criticized because they didn't plan, you know, especially Valentine's Day. And it's at the last minute. And, you know, 6 o'clock in the evening, they get off work and they head for the Walgreens or whatever to get some flowers and candy.
And they do. We have to confirm that to all the women listening. This is what men do. They wait to the last
yeah.
minute for anything.
And so I say, if you don't want me to wait till the last minute, then we need to plan ahead. We need to prepare to be able to do the surprises. And this, we're talking about finances, which, as I know, is a big issue. You know, John, we're fast approaching the end of our program, and I have a couple of other questions that I wanted to ask you. Who is John Gray?
Oh, my story, because this is your show. Oh, well, John Gray is a grandfather, four grandchildren, three daughters, and that is the greatest joy in my life. And John Gray is an author. I've written 20 books, 18, 19, and 20, some smaller ones, 20 books. And so that's what I do every year. I put out a book. Those books come from what I love to do most, which is I teach seminars. I teach seminars around the country. I'm invited all these different places around the world. I love sharing the ideas and the insights that have helped me in my life. And before that, I sort of developed these insights. I had a counseling practice for 10 years, and before that, I was a monk. All I've wanted is in my life is to develop the fullness of my potential so that I could be helpful to other people. And I continue to look for ways to increase the expression of my potential, and in that process, sharing what has worked for me that would seem to work for other people. Hmm. And my biggest commitment is helping people find love in their lives, to help marriages thrive, because the quality of a country, and then therefore the quality of a world, is directly related to the quality of the relationships that men and women have together.
And I am listening to you. However, I have this question that I bring up to each one of my guests, and you have sort of answered it. Sometimes a different question elicits new responses. What do you hope or want to achieve from the work that you are doing?
Well, what I hope and want to achieve is what I've been achieving now for 20 years.
Oh, great.
I truly, truly transform marriages. Everywhere I go on a trip, somebody comes up to me and says to me, that we were divorced, we read your book, and now we're married to each other again. And not that I expect that to happen for everybody, but those people are so thrilled by my work that they're willing to walk up and invade my space and say, you wrote that book. I mean, and of course, so many people do also thank me. Now what people say is, they come to me and say, oh my gosh, you wrote that book. When my parents read your book, it made my life so much better. they were so much nicer and more loving to each other. You saved my parents' relationship. That's often what they'll say.
That's wonderful. I have to say, too, that I was quite blessed by my parents, who chose back in the 70s when I was growing up. They actually brought us all together, all six of us, and sat us down and said, we would like to participate in this particular program. And at that time, it was Marriage Encounter through the Catholic Church.
Yes.
And they asked us if it would be okay, because it was going to take a little bit of time away from, us. Mm-hmm. And we all agreed, sure, that's fine. And I remember thinking about the time that I married the first time, well, this is cool. I've got a great backbone to, of support to go to when there are troubled times, which I did. Sadly, it didn't end, it did end. But the process of wanting a one-time, long-term marriage was my goal. My parents have been married over 56 years, I believe it is. And that's, to me, that was my goal. Those were the kinds of milestones. Well, I'm going to have to live a whole lot longer in my second marriage, but it's not impossible. But it's quite exciting to have people such as yourself who are helping to guide us. And it sounds to me like your message hasn't changed in the 30 years that you've been doing this.
It's the same message, but updated with scientific research to verify it and explain it. Which actually improves it tremendously. You know, one thing is for me to say to women that, you know, when your husband comes home, he goes to his cave, don't take it personally. He's not mad at you.
Yeah.
And there's ways to get him out of the cave. Okay, that's A. Now I can explain, but why is he in that cave? And, well, you know, men need 30 times more testosterone, and it's scientifically proven that the way you rebuild your testosterone after you've used it up in the day is you relax and forget about any of your problems. And that's what a guy does when he's sitting there watching TV, or if he's out chopping wood or whatever. She feels ignored, but really he's doing what he needs to do for him so that when he's done, he can come back and be that wonderful husband that you know him to be.
Yeah. Well, John, I applaud you for the work that you're doing. and others out there who are helping people to foster stronger, more committed and deeper relationships. And I just want to go back to this whole issue real quickly of the loss. When you do the all of the other things that you were just talking about, when those times of challenge come, those can help actually to bond you closer than ever before.
Greater potential for bonding and also greater potential for separating.
That's exciting.
It's just how we know to deal with it. And you said all the perfect words. There's nothing I can say, but I'm here.
Yeah.
And lots of affection, lots of holding. And here's one other tip I always help when people are grieving the loss of a loved one is let's tell stories. Let's talk about how wonderful that person was.
How interesting that
we
did that. I said, well, think about the times that and so forth. Because she always
bring out the picture albums and talk.
Yeah. John Gray, author of Venus on Fire, Mars on Ice. I thank you so much, and I hope we can have you back again.
I'd be happy to. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We hope that you will join us every Saturday, 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time, as well as on the internet live streaming at richarddugan.com, and also go to the website, and you can listen to this program or any of our programs as many times as you like, share them with family and friends. Until next Saturday at this time, love to Lal.